If you have any dignity, apologize to the
podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Apologize to the Podcast, the podcast where me, Jowl Man, and some of my friends will randomly discuss movies, video games, TV shows, books, all sorts of stuff that we want to geek out about. And with me is my co-host,
me, AJ, from the Dungeon Water YouTube channel,
where they will not ignore you or continue to ignore you or some faction of that. So, anyway.
They can do whatever they want. I don't care.
You don't care? Is that your best boxing accent? But I'm all ready to talk some Tarantino, because I've got here my very good tea. I know it's good tea, because I'm the one who bought it. So today, we thought we were going to start out the brand new year, 2016, with, I guess, a more mainstream movie, in quotation marks. We're going to be talking about 1994's Pulp Fiction, which is apparently every film critic's favorite movie, or in his top 100 favorite movies, or hers. It's kind of a cultural touchstone movie, and Roger Ebert called it one of the most influential movies of the 90s. So our actual discussion will be interesting on it. But this might be a bold way to start 2016, especially since Tarantino's got a new movie out in theaters, The Hateful Eight, which we both saw in the 70mm Roadshow version. And that was actually a fun experience. So, yeah. So, this is going to be an interesting discussion, because I'm actually not the biggest Tarantino fan. So, I can already feel
To say the least, yeah.
I can feel the internet slowly closing upon me, trying to murder me, and this... Who knows? Maybe this audio file will disappear. But anywho, so
well, here's the thing. Here's the thing our audience needs to understand. I have been hearing about Quentin Tarantino, or as I like to call him, Emperor Tarantino. I've been hearing about him for years and years before I even watched a single one of his movies from my fellow co-host, Mr. Tyler Miller. And,
don't give him my whole last name. They'll come after me.
Sorry about that. And he has had a consistent critique of Tarantino ever since I've known him. So saying you're not the biggest fan is kind of an understatement. But as for me, I've actually seen this is the fourth Tarantino movie I've seen. I've seen Reservoir Dogs, Django Unchained, Hateful Eight, last. A week ago. And now, Pulp Fiction is my fourth one, where I've seen the first, second, and seventh, and eighth movies. But you've seen them all, haven't you?
Yes, I've seen all of them, and I've seen almost all of them multiple times. I've only seen Django Unchained twice, and I've only seen Hateful Eight once, obviously, because money's a little tight, so I can't keep just dropping in the theater. Yeah. So, this will definitely be interesting, where I try not to get all nitpicky and snobbish, but I do have a few problems with Tarantino's movies. Mainly that I think if you trim some stuff in the right places, you would have consistently awesome movies. And, you know, I think the biggest problem there is it's always more frustrating for a movie that has wasted potential or doesn't meet its full potential than a movie that you knew going into it that, well, there's nothing really here. Like the Alvin the Chipmunk movies. You go into those and you think, okay, these are really goofy children's movies that are aimed at children, and that's really their target audience, and there's not really much else other than the target audience. So if I'm mad because the Alvin the Chipmunks movie sucks, one, I shouldn't worry because it's a kid movie, and I should probably not get too nitpicky about a children's film. And two, I mean, I knew going in what it was, and I knew it wasn't my cup of tea. With Tarantino, he's kind of a very high up exploitation film director that somehow has been a critical darling for almost every film critic. Of course, there is some people who dislike him, but it's not the fact that I dislike him. It's just I feel like almost every one of his movies have major problems, with the exception of Jackie Brown, which Jackie Brown is the only one of his movies where I just have nothing negative really to say. I just go in and I love it. And now I'd say probably Hateful Eight will probably be the second one where I don't really have that much to complain about. It's very odd. So, but before we dive in and discuss Pulp Fiction, we should probably go ahead and take a little break, stretch our feet a little bit before we go into the long one, and listen to some advertisements and some music. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Hello, and welcome to a commercial for Hello, This is the Doom Show. I'm Richard.
I'm Brad.
And on the podcast that is known as Hello, This is the Doom Show, we talk about giallo movies, slasher movies, horror movies.
We're going to interview Cary Grant live in the studio.
We're going to interview Lucio Fulci in the studio, folks. We're going to put Cary Grant in the studio with Lucio Fulci. It's the interview you never thought would happen.
I'm going to wear my Vincent Price slacks.
I'm going to wear my Citizen Kane wristwatch and monocle. And now Brad is going to recite the Pledge of Allegiance in Portuguese. Brad, go.
I don't have Portuguese.
Go! Go!
Stop hitting me!
You're a natural actor.
Yeah.
You can listen to us at hellodoomedshow.podomatic.com, or you can find the archive at doomedmoviethon.com.
I love you, pumpkin.
I love you, honey bunny.
Everybody be cool, this is a robbery!
Any of you fucking pricks move! And I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you!
And we are back. So now let's talk about some Pulp Fiction. I really don't know where to start with this movie. I guess doing plot stuff real fast.
Sure thing.
Well, in typical, I guess, quote unquote, Tarantino fashion, Pulp Fiction is pretty much three stories kind of interwoven together in a non-linear fashion. So the movie's kind of jumping all over the place. And this is because Tarantino and Robert Avery got the idea of doing an anthology movie based on Black Sabbath. So the Mario Bava movie, Black Sabbath, they had watched the movie and thought that was a really cool idea. So this was kind of their homage of that, which I didn't really get that impression until I read it in an interview. So that's kind of one obvious homage I didn't really catch. But pretty much the movie's about it's really about a bunch of different characters whose lives keep crossing in odd fashions. You have Vincent Vega and Jules, played by John Travolta and Samuel Jackson. And they're two jive-talking hitmen who work for Marcellus Wallace, played by Ving Rhames. And the movie starts out with them talking about hamburgers and the metric system and all the cool stuff about Europe and Amsterdam, such as, you know, hash and weed being legal. And really from there, it just kind of, it's pretty much three different stories kind of going back and forth. There's the main story with the two hitmen who are recovering this briefcase with a mysterious gold, shiny object that we never really see, which is a reference to the 50s film noir movie, Kiss Me Deadly, where there's an atomic, spoilers, where there's like an atomic device, a doomsday device inside of the suitcase. And you never see what it is. You just see the suitcase that keeps opening and this glowing light coming out of it. So you have that stuff.
Off of to be a warhead in Pulp Fiction, though.
Yeah, well, that would have been great. We really don't know what it's supposed to be, and that's one of the ambiguous, cool mysteries of the movie, quote-unquote. I don't really think it's mysterious. I'm just like, oh, cool, they got some shiny stuff in the suitcase.
Yeah.
So there's that plot point going on where they recover the case, shenanigans ensue, a gun accidentally goes off and kills one of the people they have with them, and they have to go to a cleaner and get the car cleaned up. And most of that story is called the Bonnie situation because, of course, they have to go to quote-unquote Quentin Tarantino's house because it's the character is played by Quentin Tarantino in a bathrobe with his gourmet coffee, and they have to get rid of the body. The second main story throughout is, you know, John Travolta as Vincent Vega has to escort Marcellus Wallace's wife named Mia Wallace, played by Uma Thurman. And they kind of go on little dates and go to a restaurant and kind of hang out and do some drugs. Shenanigans ensues. Lots of talking, lots of dancing. And the third big story is about this gold watch, which is we meet the character of Butch, played by Bruce Willis, who has this family heirloom, which is this gold watch. And he's supposed to throw a fight that's supposed to be his big retirement fight for Marcellus Wallace, but he ends up not throwing the fight and pocketing the money. He betted against it. And he's trying to make a run for it and go to Tennessee, of all places, go figure. And before he can make a clean getaway, he has to go back and get his watch. And, you know, shenanigans ensues from there. So those are really the three big stories that kind of intercut and go back and forth. The whole story is told out of order. It's very nonlinear, and that's kind of one of the staples of Tarantino's cinema. So it's a very interesting structure, but there's a lot of filler in it. So story-wise, there's not really that much that happens. I think when you go with his movies, you have to think more about the characters or the caricatures that they are. So I guess we can dive in with what we liked and what we disliked about Pulp Fiction. I open up the floor. Well, I guess just general discussion about Pulp Fiction. What are your reactions, likes, dislikes, all that cool stuff?
Right. So for me, I've seen half of his movies, I still feel like a relative newcomer just because of what I've only seen. I saw Django Unchained in theaters once, haven't seen it again since. Saw Reservoir Dogs a couple years ago, liked City on Fire better. I've seen Naval 8, you know, one or 2 weeks ago, and I've seen this movie. So, I feel like I'm getting to know Tarantino better, but I'm not an expert, and I'm not, when it comes to Tarantino. He's not, you know, he hasn't endeared me to the point that I could say, like, oh, I intend to watch all the movies, mainly because of I feel like Miller and I have had such a history with him that I feel like it's an obligation at this point. But, But in terms of this particular movie, I mean, I can definitely see that this movie is really where his style and his kind of his cinematography, his story structure, his characters, like, I guess this is really where they kind of came into focus and kind of came distinctly Tarantino. Not that Reservoir Dogs didn't have that, but it just, you know, since it was his debut effort, it wasn't all completely clear as to who Tarantino was with just that one movie. But now with this movie, you kind of get it. Like, okay, well, this is Tarantino. This is who he is. This is what he does. And I really think, you know, after watching this or watching this movie shortly after watching The Hateful Eight, he hasn't really changed all that much from Pulp Fiction to now. He still kind of has. I mean, I think one thing is, and I don't know whether or not to call this a really good thing or a bad thing. I don't know. It just kind of is. But, like, it feels like in all of his movies, you can always tell when it's in writing because it's very, like, his dialogue is very has a very specific feel to it, and it has, you know, and it's kind of like between The Hateful Eight and like Pulp Fiction. It's like, well, a lot of the times there's a lot of talking, there's a lot of telling stories, there's a lot of just kind of chit chat that ends up, you know, having some kind of punchline to it. Not in a like overtly comedic way. Like they're not necessarily telling jokes, but it's like, oh, in France, you know, in Amsterdam, a quarter pounder cheese. Royale cheese. It's like, okay, well, now I know that. I don't know why we need to share it in this movie, but thanks, I guess, right? and there's this. I think that answers your question.
Yeah. Well, my big thing is, I guess Tarantino's style is, and I've been doing really good not to be too nitpicky, because I've always really considered him a overrated director. I don't know what it is, but I think when I saw Death Proof, that was kind of like the nail in the coffin that said, okay, it's... the charm is over. I've seen a lot of people compare Tarantino to someone like Martin Scorsese or some of these big directors, and I just don't really see it. You know, I do think that Tarantino is a good writer, and I do think that I guess his appeal to a lot of people is he writes these exploitation movies with what would be called realistic dialogue, where these are trying to be fleshed out characters. These are exploitation movies where these are supposed to be kind of relatable people, or it's more realistic dialogue that you're used to, even if it goes on for way too long or just silly. And a lot of times he puts character first instead of story, you know, so in essence, he's more of a playwright than a great director. But my biggest issue is, you know, yes, it's cool to kind of, you know, write realistic dialogue for your characters to kind of flesh them out and make them memorable. But really, I think his biggest problem is it seems like almost every one of his movies, it goes on for way too long. I don't feel like what he has to say is necessarily worth the length of the movie. You know, especially with these earlier films, Reservoir Dogs isn't that long, but Pulp Fiction is almost 2 hours. I mean, it's about 2 hours and 30 minutes. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is only 10 minutes longer. But a lot more, in my opinion, happens in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly than in Pulp Fiction. It seriously feels like half the movie is filler. And then, oops, random abrupt violence or random dance sequence or random ODing. I mean, it does fit into the story, but it seems like he tries too hard to write movies as novels, as where, you know, especially with his later movies from Kill Bill onward, where he puts chapter titles in his movies and he breaks up the story in chapters. And yes, that's kind of a unique novelty, but the thing is, I feel like the movies, they've been getting better. From Jackie Brown onwards, you know, Kill Bill's got problems, Death Proof has problems, but for the most part, Inglourious Basterds is interesting, and Django Unchained is interesting. I just feel that the later half of Django Unchained is very disjointed and kind of all over the place, and then Hateful Eight is very subdued compared to his other movies. So I feel as a filmmaker, he's growing. I think having the ego blow of Death Proof not really being that good and not really well accepted even by his own fans, that kind of was good for him because his movies have been more mature. You know, I do think that there's good parts in almost all of his movies, but I feel that his style is the biggest problem with me. It feels like everything's stretched out way, way too long. And it's like, oh, just put Seinfeld and Sergio Leone together and there you go. I kind of wish he would do a 90-minute movie where he only had 90 minutes to tell a story. I think it'd be really interesting to see how he would do it. But I guess so much of his storytelling is people telling stories, and then something happens, you know. So.
You know, well, you know, it's actually kind of funny that you say that, because while you were talking about that, you just gave me, I think what would be a pretty good analogy, because, like, you know, me as a perpetual student forever, they're always, you know, there's always like, well, what, you know, what's the page limit on this paper, or what, you know, what's the minimum, what's the maximum, or whatever. And the thing is, what I've learned is that, you know, really, if you give pretty tight limits to how much you're allowed to write, then it actually makes what you're writing a lot better, because you have to put more thought into every single word and every single sentence. But if you allow yourself to just write on and on and on, you can end up, you know, writing sentences that have unnecessary addendums to them, and then unnecessary, like, just kind of, you end up having awkward wording a lot of times that you don't even really notice, and things like that. But I think that analogy could work pretty well for Tarantino, because, you know, he allows himself to just basically make a movie almost as long as he wants to. I mean, I haven't seen Kill Bill, but especially considering it's supposed to be, like, what, 4 hours if you watch the whole thing?
Yeah. If you watch both of them together, it's pretty long.
Right. So, I mean, basically, he's not giving himself any limits. I mean, I kind of feel like he's not giving himself any limits. And because he's not doing that, he's letting, you know, every little thing that he finds interesting, he's putting it in there somehow. You know, he's doing it through his characters. I mean, I kind of feel like, I mean, a lot of the stories in Pulp Fiction, like the Royale of Cheese, or, like, you know, things like that, it's not to say that they're bad, but it's just, like, I kind of feel like Tarantino is just, like, telling us stuff that he thinks is cool, and he's speaking through the mouths of his characters, and, you know, as you were saying, like, a lot of these things could be cut, or don't really feel super necessary, but, you know, and you might touch upon this, but they feel cool, at least within the context of the time period, and that's, I think that's kind of one of your complaints.
Yeah.
Trying really hard to be cool.
Yeah. Cool with a K-E-W and an L. I guess I'll kind of go into that real quick. My complaints against Tarantino. You know, and then I'll focus on the positive. So just get all the negative stuff out. For his style, yeah. I agree with what you said, where it seems like he really doesn't have any limits, and anything he finds fascinating, he'll put in there. And usually that's what he does. He'll have, like, a personal story or something and go in there. And the thing is, you know, it's the length can get tiresome. It's usually pushing the boundaries of how far you can test someone's patience. And it's not like the stories themselves are bad. I think probably some of the worst stories are probably in Django Unchained, because it's all race-related and kind of cringeworthy, but he did that to provoke reaction. With Pulp Fiction, it seems like these are just cool things for coolness' sake. And, oh, isn't this really, really cool? I know it sounds like I'm kind of selling him short, but that's honestly how it feels. And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a good, like, chill movie where you just sit back and watch characters chill, but usually they're not 2.5 hours long. That's kind of my biggest problem, is the length. I feel like his style would be more interesting if he has to kind of compress it, or has more of a better outline where he can't really go and exaggerate everything. The reason Jackie Brown is my favorite of his movies is it's based on an Elmore Leonard story, Rum Punch. And he's got the blueprint of the book, and he can do a little embellishments here and there, but he's pretty much very faithful to the book. And some of the stuff he omitted, I respect him a lot for omitting them. So the thing is, I wouldn't really call Tarantino a bad director. It's just he's a very frustrating director for me, because the problems I have are problems that kind of bug me. Some of them are nitpicky, some aren't. I think the length is just something I think a lot of people could probably agree on, is they're just they're just very long movies, and it seems like there's not really a reason for him to be the David Lean of cool-talking dialogue movies, you know. David Lean is the director who made Bridge on the River Kwai and Lawrence of Arabia and Passage to India, these really big, long movies. It just seems with Kill Bill and Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, there's not really a lot keeping me there invested other than, oh, that's a cool story. You know, I think most of his style comes from the fact that most of his education comes from movies, and he just wants to show you all these cool things, all these homages and tributes and all these references to movies that he loves. I mean, that's what he wants to do. He wants to just sort of put everything out there. And I can respect that as someone who's made shorts and someone who, you know, inspires, you know, to make, you know, movies and stuff. But the problem is you have to know what to cut. And sometimes the references can go on too long, whether it be a music cue from another movie or certain scenes copied verbatim, especially with Kill Bill. I think Kill Bill is the biggest criminal of that, where there's long stretches of the movie where it's, oh, this is an homage to, you know, 36 Chambers of Shaolin. This is an homage to Fist of the White Locust, and this is a reference to Fist of Fury and Game of Death and Lady Snowblood and Coffee and, you know, Foxy Brown. And it's just like that's it. It's just a big tribute, you know. It just goes on way too long. You know, that's really my biggest complaint. That, you know, it seems like he does a lot of stuff just to be cool, which, you know, I'm fine with some of that, but I think the length is the biggest problem. That, and there's some things where it seems like it's very immature in a non-period piece to keep dropping the N-word and some other colorful phrases using the word fuck. I don't know. That's more of a nitpick, but it just seems like there's a lot of issues where it seems like sometimes his characters go from being believable to sounding just like him when he's talking about cool stuff. So if you trim some of that down, it'd be great, which is ironic because with me explaining that problem, I went on too long. So I guess I'm cursed too.
Maybe this sounds extreme, but I'm not trying to make it sound extreme, but I kind of think that he talks through all of his characters, because I feel like almost all of them end up, especially when they start telling a story, like, I feel like Tarantino speaking through his characters, because they always, they're not saying they always are sounding the same necessarily, but it's just like, you can tell when he's going into that mode. You can kind of tell when he's like doing some dialogue that's like actually furthering the story versus when he's transitioning to, you know, some kind of story or some kind of witticism, you know. And you kind of tell when he's entering that mode and when he's going to go like, well, you know, this is quick and saying, you know, something, some kind of social commentary or, you know, or something, you know. And so I
have
to like that kind of prevalent in all of
the movies. Honestly, that's true about all of his movies. I'm not really sure about Four Rooms, like the ones where he only contributed a chunk of, because he also directed segments of Four Rooms and the first Sin City movie. That's kind of a problem. It's like when it's dialogue that actually pertains to the plot, that's great. But it's when it kind of ventures off into other territories, it's like, okay, we get it. You can kind of stop now. With that being...
I was going to say, well, at the same time, though, I don't necessarily think that what I just stated is necessarily a bad thing. I think it really kind of depends on, you know, whether or not you like Tarantino and what he has to say and what he finds fascinating, just because of, you know, if you do like the story details, and of course, A lot of these stories, especially within this movie, a lot of the main themes in this, I mean, there's a lot of iconic scenes and iconic lines in this movie, you know, paint one again, or, you know, things like that. But I think because a lot of this is so dependent upon Tarantino himself, that it almost makes his movies uniquely, that whether or not you like his movies and whether or not you like a particular dialogue, a particular scene or a particular whatever, I think you can, more than most directors, specifically blame him, because it seems to me that when he goes into those, when it comes to those scenes, that it's so purely him that if it's good, then he gets the credit for it. But if it's bad, or if you don't like it, it's bad, then he also needs to get blamed for it, because it seems to be coming straight from him, you know?
Yeah, unless he's grabbing dialogue from other movies and stuff, but...
Right.
Yeah, and that's another thing, is I don't think the homage thing is a problem, or his little tributes are the biggest problem. I think more on a pacing level it's a problem. You know, I have no problem with other filmmakers, because, I mean, hell, I love Brian De Palma, but I don't have problems with other filmmakers referencing older movies and referencing their favorite movies or doing a new twist on it. I mean, because we have had the same stories since the beginning of time, really. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I just feel like the way that he bases so much of his story on dialogue is kind of it's almost a crutch in some ways, because I really don't know how his movies would be if he toned down the dialogue. So it's kind of like a lose-lose situation. But I guess to the positive sides, I mean, he's right up there with, you know, directors like François Truffaut, Jean-Luc Godard, Martin Scorsese, and all these other filmmakers who are pretty much walking film encyclopedias. You know, he knows so much about movies, and he talks a lot about movies, and he says when he stops making movies, he'd like to write film theory books. And that's pretty cool. I mean, you know, regardless of some problems I have with Tarantino's movies structurally, I think that he is a great proponent of film preservation and film history and looking outside of the box for what constitutes as a classic movie. I mean, he really loves a little bit of everything. And that's something I can respect, because in a lot of ways, I'm very similar. I love a little bit of everything when it comes to movies, and I love talking about movies constantly. I just kind of have a thicker accent, and I don't stutter as, you know, much sometimes. But so, I mean, the good thing about Tarantino is he does love cinema, and every time you watch one of his movies, you can tell from every frame that he just loves movies and he loves making movies. And of course, the thing he's most famous for is dialogue is probably the one thing I don't like that much. You know, there's huge chunks of Pulp Fiction that I really appreciate. So, he loves putting references in, he loves talking about movies and worshiping movies. So, I mean, in that respect, he's a really, really cool guy. And he's done a lot of cool things to preserve movies. He had his own video company for a while called Rolling Thunder, where he distributed old and new exploitation movies and art house fare, and just stuff that he would recommend people go check out. And because of his movies coming out, there's a lot of favorites that have been released on Blu-ray and DVD, like Rolling Thunder and some other really cool movies. So in that respect, I think that's a positive. Another positive is he's not afraid to, to show gore, or go on to different tangents that a lot of other filmmakers would probably stay away from. He's not afraid to soak up the sleaze and the filth and other stuff that a lot of mainstream directors would stay away from. And he's also very good at sticking to his guns with what he feels is right for the story, even if sometimes it doesn't really work, but, you know, they're all his decisions. So he is in complete control of his movies, which is very interesting. You know, since we've kind of talked about, Tarantino, really the only thing that bugs me is some of his fan base, or they love him more than some of the movies that he was inspired from. So there's a whole generation of mainstream movie fans that love Tarantino but would never watch any of the movies that inspired his films. So that's kind of sad. But there is a lot of people who do generally, you know, love cinema and love older movies that do go back and watch these. I remember when I was first getting into exploitation movies, I saw some couple of interviews with Tarantino where he was talking about Shaw Brother movies. And that's also when Kill Bill came out. So I started watching Shaw Brother films, and now I'm a huge fan. You know, I love 36 Chambers of Shaolin and My Young Auntie and Heroes of the East. So, you know, it is really cool hearing some of the movies he recommends, because after all, his career started because he was writing screenplays while working at a video store. And that's a really cool legacy. So his legacy is sometimes better than he is, where you feel like you can go out and make a movie. Because he was just a video clerk who would watch movies all day, and he kind of just had the idea of, oh, I'm going to go out there. So I think probably his legacy is cooler than some of the individual movies. So I guess going on to talk about this movie in particular, now that we've had our long tangent. So anyway, well, how do you want to go about this now?
Well, I think the best thing to do would be to introduce things, then cut to a much later scene, and then cut to a different story, and then go back to beginning, to go to full circle.
And then we'll have a little brief intermission with a cartoon or something. Exactly. Yeah, so I guess...
Speaking of which, I think that's one thing, I'm not saying, I know some people probably like the non-linear story. I don't necessarily dislike that it was non-linear. Like, for example, in The Hateful Eight, I think it was done pretty well, because obviously it would have ruined any surprises if we had known, you know. Should I give spoilers for that movie?
Yeah, spoilers. If you haven't seen The Hateful Eight, we're going to spoil some things.
Yeah, well, just really quick. Just like, obviously, if we had known about Channing Tatum's gang and how they had destroyed the mini haberdashery beforehand, then obviously there wouldn't have been any surprises. So in that particular case, having all of your story is very, very necessary. In this particular movie, it's not really necessary. I think the main issue I have with it is that, like, the stories don't really tie together except for the very beginning and the very end is the only, like, it does come full circle in the sense that Ringo and Yolanda's story that we see at the very, very beginning before the credits does get resolved with Vincent and Jules at the very end. But the rest of the stories in between only have very, very small connections to each other, which, you know, of course, as you said, the origin of this movie was supposed to be an anthology, which does make a lot of sense in retrospect. But I honestly would have preferred it if it just had more of a coherent story that you know, actually tied everything together, as opposed to the kind of the disjointed going back and forth kind of stuff, especially because of, like, you know, when you think about it, watching the opening, or not the very opening with Yolanda and Ringo, but watching Vincent and Jules kill Brett and get the briefcase, then we cut to them being meeting with Marcellus. We already know that they may get Marcellus and Kay. So for me, it was kind of weird for them to then, at the very end of the movie, go back to their story and what happened immediately after they shot Brett. Like, I guess it's a bold avant-garde move, and that probably was. Like, I don't know, I just feel like it's kind of, especially because we already know what happened. Like, we already know they make it out okay. You know, when Vincent dies, there's not really any tension or anything. It's just kind of like, oh, well, now this is how we'll choose him in the movie, apparently. I think the only good part about his choice to change up the story in that way was that it did end up coming full circle in the end with Yolanda and Ringo, because otherwise story would have started and really never gone anywhere. So other than that, I didn't really see the point of that particular sequence of events. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. The thing is, I don't have a problem with it being non-linear, but it seems more of just a way to kind of change up the story a little bit, because if it would have been in order, it would have really not been that interesting, and kind of just like, eh, okay, whatever.
Well, I think that's the problem, though. I think you need a story where if you had it all in order, it would be interesting.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Well, no, I understand, but I think this movie's more about style, and while there's nothing really wrong with this movie, I think it's probably, I hate to say it, but it is more overrated, because honestly, Tarantino has grown as a filmmaker since this. Obviously this is the second movie he made, and it was a huge hit, and it was a big ego busher. I guess it was something different at the time, but in retrospect, I feel like it hasn't really held up. It's more of a movie like Boondock Saints or Big Lebowski, even though I like Big Lebowski more, where it's remembered for some of the quotes, and you can merchandise it, and because of it being overexposed, you were saying that a lot of scenes in the movie seemed iconic, and you were disappointed when...
I can explain that. I was
going to
say that next.
Yeah. It's like quote-unquote iconic, but I really feel like it hasn't held up. But on a storytelling level, I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing non-linear, but I just feel like this story wasn't strong enough. It seemed like these were three mediocre stories tied up. Now, I do like the characters. I think, you know, if we go ahead and look at the cast, you know, I really do like John Travolta as Vincent Vega. He spends most of the movie looking all doped up and drugged out because he's been shooting up heroin, which the whole drug angle, going on a tangent there, I feel like the whole drug angle was probably not needed other than a excuse to have Mia Wallace in danger. They probably could have handled that better, but I guess it was cool and edgy to have drugs in this movie. But, I enjoy almost everyone's performance in the film, except for the drug dealers. I think they're kind of a little too comical, but I like John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson. I especially love Harvey Keitel as the Wolf, which a really weird chain of events, like almost a 60 degrees of Kevin Bacon, because his character, the Wolf, is a lot of fun, but he's more of a sophisticated version of his character from Point of No Return, which I think that's why he was cast, was because of Point of No Return. And Point of No Return is the American remake of La Femme Nikita, and Harvey Keitel plays the Jean Reno character of Victor from La Femme Nikita. So, in essence, it's a third degree of the same character from La Femme Nikita, just with cooler dialogue. Yeah, and it's...
I say, though, about Harvey Keitel, I read, and this could be wrong, that, like, Harvey Keitel is one of Tarantino's favorite actors. And it was funny, though, because of when you watch the film, Quentin Tarantino plays one of the characters, and he has to act, he has at least one scene with just him and Harvey Keitel. So I think it's kind of funny. It's almost like, oh, well, I'll just write a scene where I get to interact with one of my favorite actors. It's like, well, I mean, sure, you can do that, but...
Yeah, and that's the thing. It seems like there's a lot of stuff that was put in here that there's nothing wrong with them. It's just they're just put in there for him. And the audience can kind of just deal with it, because this is a movie that he would want to see, which, you know, I can respect that, but there is a lot of filler. Harvey Keitel is great in the movie. I really like Amanda Plummer as, you know, one of the two robbers in the movie, you know, in the diner. I like Tim Roth in the movie. I like Uma Thurman. And I really do like Bruce Willis. This is a very interesting role for Bruce Willis. And I'd have to say probably, if I had to name my favorite scenes in the movie, it would be probably the Royale with Cheese part. Because, I mean, that is, you know, a pretty funny little story. I love the whole shenanigans that happens with Bruce Willis, the whole Golden Watch story. I think that's very solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Christopher Walken, just having him in the movie kind of, you know, rose it up, you know, and elevated the film. But, you know, so some of the tangents can be good and some can be bad. But I feel like that whole section of the movie is pretty tight and more interesting than the whole romance between Vincent Vega and Uma Thurman. I thought that was kind of just silly. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. But the Bruce Willis section... Yeah, it really didn't, other than she almost died, and then she had to get an adrenaline shot. It seemed kind of cheap, but the Bruce Willis section is very solid. I think it's a very good part of the movie. It's probably my favorite part of the movie, even if it does end with people being raped. But, you know, what can you do? Yeah, it's like, oh, well, what can you do? You know, rape was popular in the 70s. Yeah, I'm not really sure if any of the characters in this movie are quote unquote good, but they're definitely relatable. He likes to make very compelling bad people, which is an interesting way to go about it. But I'm more of a fan of the John Woo style of making them have redemption, unlike in Tarantino's movies, with maybe the exception of Kill Bill, because she kind of gets her child back and all that. But anywho,
I agree there really weren't any bad performances from this movie. When you self and figure yourself into the movie, it kinda makes it awkward, I guess.
His line delivery was very smirky.
Characters were all pretty interesting, and they were obviously well acted, and they were well done. But I'm going to say my final kind of complaint that you were hinting at. Not really a complaint. I guess it's kind of sum up of the whole movie. I'm probably going to say that to the end. But don't get me wrong. I did like, you know, a lot of the parts in this movie, especially the one of my favorite parts is the Christopher Walken scene, because that's actually one bigger scene that I watched like clips of that on YouTube out of context in the movie for so long, you know, for a long time, that I've always enjoyed it. And you know, there's a lot of parts in it that is obviously enjoyable. I think kind of mainly where the complaints come in is mostly kind of more like at a meta level. I like, you know, kind of just taking the movie as a whole. She's like, well, what was the point of that? What was that, the purpose of that? Was that really necessary? Where is this movie going? You know? why did the sequence of events go in this way and not a different way? You know?
Yeah.
Things like that.
And I think that's kind of how I'd sum it up. I mean, yeah, I mean, all the performances are good. Like I said, on a filmmaking level, I think all the stuff with the Bruce Willis story is fairly suspenseful, including, you know, something you would never see in a normal, quote-unquote, hitman movie, which is you have your hitman taking a dump, and he leaves his machine gun in the other room where the victim can grab it. And that's the one thing that's always bugged me about the movie. I'm like, really? You left your machine gun on the kitchen table while you go take a shit and read Modesty Blaze, which apparently is a really good book. I should read that. That's the book that John Travolta kind of walks around and is constantly reading in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and if it seems like our conversation is kind of disjointed, well, like the movie, I feel like talking about this movie as a whole, it's just a very, like, I guess we can kind of do our closing thoughts. It feels like the movie itself is, it's based on these characters, and it's more about the little things, but the only problem, in my opinion, is it's just too long. I feel like this movie could have used some cutting. I know there's some deleted scenes from the movie that Quentin cut out, because he thought it didn't serve the story very well, and I kind of question, well, there's a lot more of that in this movie. But the thing is about Tarantino, I'll give him this, is if we were just going to have a long rant about his films, he's a very interesting director. I don't think he's a bad director. I just kind of not necessarily nitpicky, but I do have issue with the pacing and the length of his movies when I could, you know, watch something that's just as good. Because I feel like Pulp Fiction is on par with a lot of different exploitation movies. But I don't feel like it's an art house great. You know, I would probably rank this with blaxploitation movies or other drive-in movies, where it's like, it's good. It doesn't really do anything for the soul. I wasn't really left with any deep thoughts. So it just kind of confuses me how this is kind of... Yeah, I mean, I never really felt that I was supposed to get a greater meaning of the world. Kind of maybe when it gets to like Jules talking about walking the earth, but really I never was super invested in any of the characters. So I'd say this is average. This is by no means a bad movie, but I feel like there's lots of interesting things you could talk about with Tarantino's movies, and there's always something to say. So in that respect, his legacy is sealed. But Pulp Fiction as a movie, you know, there's good chunks in it. It's filmed mostly like a play. There's not really a lot of crazy camera work in it. It's very subdued cinematography-wise. It's mostly about the actors reading the dialogue. You know, and there's certain stuff that's cool. I do like the soundtrack. The surf music's really, really good. I do like the surf music. I think in his later movies where he starts just taking music from other movies wholesale. I mean, yeah, he paid for the rights, but it's more distracting having music from Navajo Joe or Lady Snowblood or Female Prisoner 71 Scorpion playing kind of diminishes the suspense because it's like, oh, okay, this is misplaced. Luckily, Hateful Eight has a really, really good soundtrack, so that's one thing I can't bitch about in that movie. But I think Kill Bill, you know, is probably the worst of his soundtracks. As a soundtrack, it's great, but with the movie, it's very disjointed. Pulp Fiction's soundtrack, on the other hand, is very well handled. I really dig the surf music. I have a bigger appreciation of surf music because of this movie. So if anything, that's one thing I can say, because I'm definitely not going to dress like Vincent Vega with the messed up hair and the little cowboy tie. So, I mean, that's really it. I mean, there's a lot of cool theories, and it's always cool to be like, oh, I catch this reference from this. Oh, that bag of heroin is named Bava after Mario Bava. Isn't that cool? But as a movie, I was kind of left a little cold. Like I said, I don't hate it. If you just want to have a movie to put on the background, to chill with, I think Pulp Fiction would be good. You know, just to kind of have something on the background. It's perfectly fine and average, which is probably where I'm going to get all the internet hate. Because I just called it average, not the greatest movie of all time. So, any further thoughts and closing thoughts from you, man?
Well, I'll just say two things. I'll get to kind of my main point. I guess about the soundtrack, I looked this up. So, I mean, basically, there wasn't an actual film score. There was no composer, but he did take, you know, all the surf music and all the, you know, from, like, actual previously released music from different artists, and he got the rights to put them in the movie. And I did like the music. I don't really have a problem with it, but I do want to point out that it's kind of funny because it's almost because of, you know, the way it kind of plays out, especially I think during the early parts of the movie where it's just like song after song after song is almost like glaring in the background. It's kind of like, you know, oh, is this movie just Quentin Tarantino's opportunity to show us his favorite playlist? Like, I kind of felt like that at times during the first couple parts of it. You know, I didn't appreciate the music, but I just kind of felt like that was what was going on because it was just song after song after song for a while. And then, of course, the only other music in the whole movie would be silence. So it's either something playing, you know, some song playing in the background, or there's no music at all.
Dinogenic music, yeah.
But then the main point I had was, like, you know, for me coming in as someone who has seen a few Quentin Tarantino movies, but I mean, I've been aware of Pulp Fiction for many, many years, and I watched, I mean, at least 5 years ago, probably even more than 5 years ago, when I saw something like some, you know, clip from the movie, or at least pictures, especially like, as I said, the Christopher Walken scene. I've known of that scene for as long as I can remember. And then, I guess I'm just kind of listing some of the iconic moments that I was aware of from this movie before I actually watched it. The scene with Jules and Vincent killing Brett, like, I knew English,
Do you speak it?
Yeah, English, do you speak it? Say what again, I pretty much knew, and then, the swing, or not the swing, the Swiss dancing scene, contest, obviously the Christopher Walken scene, like, I knew of all this stuff beforehand, and, and so coming into this movie, I knew this had a lot of iconic things in it, and to be honest, I was really looking forward to figuring out, like, oh, well, I know of all these iconic iconography from this movie, and I know, it's supposed to be kind of cool and edgy and blah, 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 but I was really interested to know, how do these scenes, how do they all fit in context? Like, what story all ties these iconic bits together? And once I watched the movie, I was actually kind of let down to realize that, most of the iconic things that you watch in this movie don't really have any context together. They don't really tie in together, besides the fact that it's the same movie. They're almost kind of like, a lot of these things are standalone vignettes that technically don't really tie in together in any meaningful way. So, Christopher Walken watching, and what does that have anything to do with the briefcase or with the dancing scene? And also, I was kind of let down because it wasn't. That I was let down to the fact that watching these iconic scenes, if I was watching out of context, I get just about as much enjoyment from them as watching them in context, because in context, there's not really too much that is added to these scenes, which, in retrospect, it kind of makes Pulp Fiction a disappointment, because if I have the answers to how these things all tie together, then the answer is kind of underwhelming because they don't really tie together. So I think that's kind of the main thing. And at the same time, it doesn't necessarily discount that some of these vignettes are cool. I mean, and now that I've seen the movie, I understand that Tarantino did this on purpose. He wanted to make, a non-linear story. He wanted to make basically an anthology like Mario Bava and things like that. And that's, now that I know that, I understand that's not necessarily, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. It's just that I was expecting much more from it than I got. And so perhaps if I went into this movie knowing that it was going to be disjointed and going to be nonlinear and such like that, but perhaps I would have lowered my expectations. Well, my expectations were pretty high for what it was, and I think I was, in some ways, I was kind of let down. But then again, let down not in a sense like, oh, it's a bad movie, or oh, I hated it. I just kind of let down in like, oh, well, it wasn't as good as it was, kind of hyped up to be from knowing about it for years and never actually seeing it, So I guess that's kind of my take.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of weird ways, his style to me kind of feels like parody movies, like Scary Movie or Airplane or something like that, where it's like you just have stories and vignettes kind of coming at you. And it's kind of one of those, like, just put it on and chill movies, but I don't really feel emotionally challenged by Pulp Fiction. I don't think it's a work of art. I think it's a competent movie, and I still don't really understand the hype. Maybe I needed to be there or be an adult when it first came out in 1994, but unfortunately to me, it just seems like a very odd movie where I guess its impact is kind of dwindled a little bit. Maybe if you're a diehard Tarantino fan, it'd be better. But as someone who is, I respect him, but I do have problems with some of his movies. It's kind of just eh. I would not put it on a favorites list. You know, which is ironic because his next movie is the one that I just love and gush over. So it's kind of like, it feels weird. It feels like this whole episode we've kind of been avoiding talking about Pulp Fiction as a movie and talking more about Tarantino's career. But that's really the biggest thing you can get out of it. As a movie, it's kind of just like, eh, oh, isn't that cool? Yeah, okay. So I'm probably one of the few people on the internet who thinks that. So if this is going to be labeled as the worst episode ever, well, okay, fine. At least with a conversation about Reservoir Dogs and City on Fire, there's a little more compare and contrast. But this is just this is sort of just a Tarantino milkshake, maybe a $5 milkshake of, you know, cool stuff. There's memorable bits and stuff, but
yeah, there's lots of
yeah.
There's lots of things.
Which is a memorable movie. Oh, definitely, it's a memorable movie. It's not a bad movie. I just don't see it as this great touchstone masterpiece. I think it's just sort of a cool movie to put on the background. It works. It's very quotable and fun, but it's just not one of my favorites. And it's.
And I think for me, like, you know, I had the impression, even though I knew Tarantino, and I knew that, and I had been. And I talked with you about Tarantino for so long that obviously that does color my opinion at least somewhat. It was possible for me to be like unbiased, I suppose. But I did go into this movie expecting that, you know, this is considered a masterpiece by many, it's considered a big deal. And I was open to watching it and saying, yeah, I agree, that was a big deal. And in some ways, I did kind of agree, but in other ways, I really don't, I guess. So it's kind of a mixed bag, you know?
Yeah. And this is weird, because I don't really have hate for it, and I'm not very optimistic, so it's kind of like, eh, dead air. But I will say that, I mean, you know, it's a huge quotable movie. That's why I keep repeating that. So yeah, so Pulp Fiction's fun. I think it's kind of mellowed a little bit. You know, like I said, maybe I just had to be there the summer or spring of 1994 to get it. But I think Tarantino's moved on to better things from here. So anyway, well, so Pulp Fiction's interesting. We'll definitely cover some of Tarantino's other films. You know, I'm glad that we didn't just focus on the movie references, because that could get annoying when you think of just how many movie references are in there. But if it's kind of more of a reference game, I think that's a good way to watch some of his movies, where it's like, okay, ooh, there's this reference to this. And it's kind of a full game where you kind of try to catch the references and have him repackage them. But yeah, I mean, but, you know, Pulp Fiction, it's not bad. And it's not great. It's just, it's very good middle-of-the-road entertainment, in my opinion. So bring on the battle axes. I'll be prepared to get killed off for saying that. So, but it's a lot of fun. And I kind of want to go to a 50s diner now. Which, you know, speaking of random tangents, let's go back to the beginning. Anyway, I will say the set design in the movie is pretty cool. I really do like Jackrabbit Slim's.
Oh, yeah.
That would probably be one restaurant I would love to go to if it was real. So, yeah, that's one thing is, I think Tarantino is one of the few people who actually makes his fake products for his movies that he consistently uses. Because there's Red Apple Cigarettes, which is Red Apple Tobacco in Hateful Eight. There's Big Kahuna Burger, which is in this and Reservoir Dogs. I'll have to rewatch his other movies to see if they're in there too, but Big Kahuna Burger is a fictional place, unfortunately, so I do want to try it if it ever becomes a reality. Come on, people. Come on, fanboys. Make your burger joints. And then, of course, the restaurants, because there's Jackrabbit Slim's in here, and then he wrote the screenplay from Dusk Till Dawn, and there's the Titty Twister in that movie. So Those are fun places that would be cool to check out. But I just wanted to give an interesting opinion out there, which is neither contempt and hate or over-exaggerated joy. Because usually on the internet, you either have to love it or hate it. And I'm kind of like, I'm in the middle. You know.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to contact the show, you can message us on Facebook or on YouTube. You can find us on the YouTube page, JalloMan22, or the Facebook page, Apologize the Podcast, on Facebook. And you can send comments or like, subscribe, all that good stuff. And then if you want to say I'm a complete idiot for not loving Tarantino, that's okay. Whatever, go for it. And if you're Tarantino, hey Quentin, I do like your coffee. and you can find AJ at Don't Ignore Me, the YouTube channel. I'm stumbling. I think maybe he's thinking about us. He's gonna pour hot coffee on my face. But
I would do that if I could.
Yeah, the good shit though, not that crap that Bonnie buys. See, I mean, it is a quotable movie. I'm still quoting the movie, so I guess that's something. Anyway, we will catch you guys later, and we will talk about more Tarantino movies in the future and more random stuff here in a while. So, everyone, peace, and Apologize the Podcast.
Hello, this is Kenny B.
This is Tom KW.
And we are two of the hosts from the Podcast on Fire Network. You want Asian cinema in a podcast? Well, we got the solution for you. Because at the Podcast on Fire Network, there's 7+ shows for you to choose from. You want Hong Kong action cinema and audio commentaries?
We got that.
You want dirty Hong Kong cinema?
We got that.
You want the eternal question, what's Korean cinema answered?
We'll answer that.
The flagship show, Podcast on Fire, covers classic Hong Kong cinema. Everything from Bruce Lee to Jackie Chan, John Woo and Jet Li. Featuring in-depth discussions with an aura of fun. This is your primary stop in the podcast world for classic Hong Kong cinema. In short, is it a like or dislike for Hardboiled throughout the years?
It is pretty much like Die Hard Fox Bat Draft.
The director series helps you put a name on some of those favourite movies of yours, like Story of Ricky, Crime Story, and The Seventh Curse, tracking progress, or possibly not, in a continuing series of discussions on various directors. Finally, you know, Nam Noi Choi is kind of masterpiece.
It's the f***ing Seventh Curse time! Yeah!
This week in Sleaze is the adults-only show, where the Podcast on Fire Network lets the sleaze and nudity rule as the Category 3 era gets a chance to matter, be laughed at, or ridiculed.
Let's talk some f***ing!
Was this a mindfuck?
This was definitely a mindfuck.
And Taiwan Noir highlights the forgotten Taiwanese cinema of yesteryear. So join me, Kenny B, and Tom KW, and a cast of thousands at podcastonfire.com. Also available on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, and come chat with us on the Podcast on Fire Network Facebook group and on Twitter at Podcast on Fire. Podcast on Fire Network. It's Asian cinema in a podcast.